Aligning incentives. Pharmaceutical companies make more money treating you forever than curing you once. Defense contractors earn $1,425 per lobbying dollar. Nobody is evil. The incentives are. Rearrange the profit motive so curing disease pays better than causing it, and watch capitalism accidentally save your species. This manual is not about convincing people to be better. You've been trying that for 6,000 years, and it hasn't worked once. Every temple, sermon, philosophy lecture, and after-school special in your history has been an attempt to make humans behave nicely. And the result is your current situation, which I think we can all agree is not nice. This chapter is about something different. It's about building a system where doing well and doing good are the same thing. Every major interest group gets aligned behind curing disease, not through charity or guilt, but through pure profit. On Wishonia, we discovered that you can't change what organisms want. You can only change what's profitable. Then they change themselves enthusiastically and take credit for it afterward. Defense contractors, teaching merchants of death to love life. Military lobbyists spend $127 million on lobbying. They get $181 billion in government contracts back. That's roughly $1,425 returned per dollar invested. Better returns than any hedge fund in history. And all you have to do is help kill strangers. They will oppose any treaty that threatens this. Not because they're evil, though that helps, but because murder is profitable, and they like money. This is not a moral observation. This is an investment thesis. Lobbyists are like pigeons. They go where the food is. Currently, the food is in opposing the treaty. You could try convincing them that saving lives is noble, or you could just move the food. This is not a metaphor about pigeons. This is the entire strategy of this chapter, applied to every actor in every section until you get tired of hearing it. It's like convincing a vampire to open a blood bank. Counterintuitive, but mathematically sound. The offer. You give them victory incentive alignment bonds, paying 272% annually, which is more than their current salary and stock options. You give them early access, which means they get rich before everyone else, which is the thing your species cares about even more than getting rich first. You give them consulting fees, which is legal bribery with a name, and strategic advisor positions, which are fake jobs with real money. On Wishonia, we would find this arrangement absurd. On Earth, it's called industry relations, and there are conferences about it. The math. Their current job, lobbying against the treaty, pays $500,000 to $2 million per year, depends on military budgets staying huge, and leaves a legacy of made orphans for money. Your offer, lobbying for the treaty, $5 million to $20 million in bonds, returning 272% annually as long as the treaty holds. And since bondholders are billionaires with pre-existing influence over government, good luck repealing it. Legacy? Accidentally saved humanity while getting rich. Most people can do this math, you hope. Why they take it?
272% is more than whatever they're making now. That's it. That's the whole reason. On Wishonia, we spent years looking for a deeper explanation for human behavior. There isn't one. It's money. It's always money. The deeper explanation is money. The treaty doesn't actually hurt them. Military budget drops 1% from $2.72 trillion to $2.69 trillion. They still have 99% to protect. Defense contracts still flow. Jobs stay. You're asking them to accept slightly less murder funding in exchange for becoming extremely wealthy. This is not a hard sell. This is barely a sell at all. It's more of a notification. Add 10% victory incentive alignment bonds to a pension portfolio, and blended returns jump from 10% to something that looks like a typo on a spreadsheet. Be suspicious, then check the math. Once Lockheed buys bonds, Raytheon has to follow or explain to shareholders why Lockheed's portfolio is outperforming theirs. Start with pension funds.
fiduciary duty requires best returns. They end up lobbying for the treaty to protect their investment. Your species calls this unintended consequences. On Wishonia, we call it the intended consequence because we intended it, because that was the plan. What you're not asking. You're not asking them to close factories, lay off workers, stop making weapons, convert to medical equipment, feel bad about anything. You're only asking them to accept higher returns on investment, stop blocking the treaty, and maybe say nice things about it publicly. They keep 99% of their current income, plus get rich from bonds. This is the kind of negotiation where both sides win and one side doesn't even realize it's a negotiation. On your planet, this is called a good deal. On mine, it's called obvious. Why this works? It's all legal. Victory incentive alignment bonds are legal investment vehicles. Lobbying is protected free speech. Consulting fees are standard practice. They designed the system to allow this. You're just using it correctly for the first time, which is to say, you're using it for something other than weapons, which has never occurred to anyone before, which tells you everything about your species' relationship with its own legal system. The defense contractor CEO explains it to the board like this. We diversified into bonds paying 272% returns versus the market's 10%. If the treaty passes, we profit enormously. If it fails, we still have our defense contracts. It's a hedge. I'm being prudent. You're welcome. The board nods. The board always nods when the numbers are good. The board has never once asked whether the numbers were moral. This is, again, the design parameter. Here's what the CFO tells the CEO after the board meeting. The treaty is even better than a hedge because fewer bases means less blowback, means fewer terrorism crises. Robert Pape at the University of Chicago found that 95% of suicide terrorist attacks from 1980 to 2003 were responses to foreign military occupation. And the $8 trillion war on terror took attacks from about 1,000 per year to nearly 17,000 by 2014. Crisis-driven budgets sound great for defense revenue, but they're terrible for long-term capital planning. Emergency appropriations spike procurement, then get clawed back when the panic fades. You can't plan a 15-year fighter jet program on a budget that lurches from crisis to crisis. The treaty replaces boom-bust panic cycles with stable, predictable bond returns. A CFO who can forecast revenue 20 years out sleeps better than one who depends on the next attack making the news. Fewer crises, more stability, higher Sharpe ratio. The CFO doesn't phrase it as world peace. The CFO phrases it as reduced volatility in our revenue model. Same thing, different PowerPoint. Budget, strategic allocation from the $1 billion incentive alignment budget. The timeline. Optimistic, if this works, key lobbyists flip in months 1 to 12. Defense contractor trade associations go neutral by month 18, and by month 25, former opponents take credit for supporting medical research, which they discovered they cared about yesterday but will swear they've cared about their whole lives. Your species does this with every social change. Opposition, resistance, capitulation, retroactive credit. It's the four seasons of human progress. On Wishonia, we have a word for the moment when someone who fought against a good idea starts claiming they invented it. The word is credit worm. Your species doesn't have a word for it, which is why it happens so often. Things without names are invisible. Pessimistic, if this doesn't work, you and everyone you've ever loved slowly deteriorate into dust. You can't fight the military-industrial complex. It's too big, too entrenched, too profitable. But you might be able to buy it. Insurance companies, the accidentally aligned industry. Insurance companies are theoretically on your side. They've had this exact incentive for 150 years and haven't done anything about it, which is the most human sentence I've ever written. Every disease you cure is billions they don't have to pay out. They are, on paper, your most natural ally. In practice, they've spent 150 years not noticing this, which makes them your most natural ally in the same way that a person sleeping through an earthquake is technically experiencing an earthquake. Their current death spiral. Medical costs side 7% annually. Premiums can't keep pace because of regulation. Claims are destroying margins. Chronic disease means lifetime payouts, which means every patient who doesn't die is a patient who keeps costing money, which means insurance companies are in the bizarre position of profiting when you die quickly and losing money when you die slowly, which is not what they put on their brochures, but is what their actuarial tables reveal. Their ideal customer is someone who pays premiums for 40 years and then drops dead instantly. On Washonia, we have a name for an organization that collects your money for decades and hopes you die before you can use it. We call it a casino. You call it healthcare. Their business model is dying, which is ironic given that their business model is about dying. Your salvation offer. The math they can't refuse. Diabetes costs $327 billion annually. Alzheimer's costs $355 billion. Heart disease costs $363 billion. And cancer costs $208 billion. Cure any one of these, and the ongoing savings are roughly 90%. They don't need a $0 costs. They just need costs to stop rising 7% annually. A cure does that. A cure is, from an actuarial perspective, the best thing that can happen to an insurance company. The second best thing is you dying quickly. The worst thing is you dying slowly and expensively, which is what your current medical system specializes in. The implementation. They buy victory incentive alignment bonds, 272% returns. They lobby for the treaty, which protects their investment. Cures reduce their claims, which increases their profits. They lower premiums, which gives them competitive advantage. And a healthier population produces a permanent profit increase. Each step makes the next step more profitable. It's a virtuous cycle, which is like a vicious cycle, but nobody dies. Your species has built many vicious cycles. This would be your first virtuous one, which is a statistic that should embarrass you more than it apparently does. Why they're your natural allies. Insurance companies are the only industry that profits from human health. Every other healthcare player profits from sickness. Pharma wants chronic patients who take pills forever. Insurance wants cures. Hospitals want full beds. Insurance wants empty ones. Doctors want repeat visits. Insurance wants one-time fixes. This makes insurance companies the only participant in your healthcare system whose financial incentives align with you not dying, which is a remarkable thing to say about a single industry in a system that supposedly exists to keep you alive. Pharmaceutical companies, converting drug dealers to drug cures. Pharma companies aren't evil. They're just doing what any rational organism does when you pay it to keep people sick. Keeping people sick. They're trapped in a business model that rewards treating symptoms forever instead of curing diseases once. This is like blaming a river for flowing downhill. The river isn't evil. The river is just going where gravity takes it. If you want it to go somewhere else, you don't lecture the river, you move the landscape. Their current trap. Each new drug costs $2.6 billion to develop. The success rate is 10%, which is lottery odds, except lottery tickets don't cost billions and don't take 17 years to scratch off. Revenue per success averages $6.7 billion. Return on investment, or ROI, measured as internal rate of return, or IRR, on late-stage pipeline assets, 1.2%, which was Deloitte's 2022 historic low for top 20 pharma. It bounced to 5.9% by 2024, still the kind of number that makes venture capitalists cry and then invest in real estate instead. Patent cliffs turn blockbusters into generics overnight. And the public hates them. Martin Shkreli is their poster boy, which is like having your industry represented by the person the industry itself wishes it could disown, but can't, because he's just a more honest version of what they all do. The math that converts them. Pragmatic clinical trials become 44.1 times cheaper. Current system? $41,000 per participant on dedicated sites with monitoring, custom infrastructure, and regulatory overhead that costs more than the research it's overseeing. With your decentralized institutes of health, cost drops roughly 97.7% because it uses existing medical practices, existing electronic health record, or EHR, data, and pragmatic design. A 50,000 participant trial drops from approximately $2 billion to approximately $46 million. This is the difference between betting your company and betting your department's coffee budget. The current system costs $41,000 per patient for trials. 90% of drugs fail, which means billions of dollars are lost. Development takes 10 to 17 years, and only blockbusters are viable. The decentralized system costs $929 per patient, a 97.7% reduction. Failure costs tens of millions of dollars instead of billions, survivable. Development takes 2 to 3 years, and rare diseases become profitable because you can afford to try. This doesn't change whether drugs work biologically. It changes the economics. You profit from trying, not just from succeeding. On your planet, profit from trying sounds radical. On mine, it sounds like the definition of research. Pharma's new business model: volume over blockbusters. Lower revenue per drug, but massively more attempts. Currently, they target blockbusters worth over $1 billion only. They make approximately 10 attempts per year, each costing $2.6 billion. They ignore rare diseases entirely and have limited capacity. Under the decentralized model, $500 million per success becomes profitable. They can make thousands of attempts because failure doesn't bankrupt you. Rare diseases become gold mines with no competition, and capacity increases by 12.3 times. How to get them on board? You start with generic manufacturers who have no R&D costs and immediate margin. Then you add biotechs who are desperate for cash and will try anything. Desperation is the mother of innovation on your planet. This is not how it should work, but it's how it does work. Then big pharma follows because they can't let competitors have the advantage. Then the industry transforms and competition shifts from marketing to outcomes. This is the same adoption curve as every technology your species has ever adopted: small, desperate, competitive, universal. It took 7 years for smartphones. It took 12 years for social media. It should take less for something that cures disease, but your species has consistently demonstrated that it adopts entertainment faster than medicine, so add a few years for that. Politicians: hacking democracy's source code. Politicians want exactly two things: votes and money. I've watched your politicians for 80 years, and I have never observed a third motivation. Some of them claim to want a better world or to serve the public, but when you observe their actual behavior rather than their stated behavior, the data reduces to votes and money, with a correlation coefficient so close to 1.0 that the decimal places are embarrassing. Their current misery. They spend 70% of their time begging for money, which leaves 30% for everything else, which is governing. But most of that 30% is spent on things that aren't governing either, so the actual time spent governing approaches zero, which explains the quality of the governance. Their approval rating is 18%, which means 82% of the people they work for think they're doing a bad job, which would get you fired in any other profession, but in politics, it gets you re-elected because the other candidate has an 18% approval rating too, and the election is just a competition to see who is less disliked. Lobbyists write the bills. Donors set the agenda. The politician's actual role is to stand in front of a flag and announce things that other people decided, which is called leadership on your planet and puppetry on mine. Your political welfare program. The money pipeline. Support the treaty and super PAC funds flow in. Oppose it and super PAC funds flow to your opponent. This is how your political system already works, except currently the money flows from death manufacturers who want more weapons. You're just adding a second faucet that flows from people who want fewer diseases. The politician doesn't even need to change their behavior, they just need to notice which faucet has more water. The vote harvest. 280 million people voting on wishocracy. You publish voting records, Senator X opposes cheaper healthcare. Their constituents see this in real time. Support the treaty or face electoral extinction. This is democracy working as designed, which is so unusual that it will probably be reported as a threat to democracy, because on your planet, democracy working is considered a disruption to the normal functioning of democracy, which is not working. The bipartisan beauty. Republicans will call it a free market solution that cuts government spending. Democrats will call it universal healthcare access that helps the poor. Libertarians will call it the end of FDA tyranny and personal freedom. Socialists will call it the destruction of big pharma monopoly and power to the people. They're all describing the same thing. They're all right, and they'll all take credit. This is the only policy in your species' history that every political faction can honestly claim as their own, which means it's either the best policy ever proposed or the most dishonest, and since your species can't tell the difference, it doesn't matter. Billionaires. Self-interest meets self-preservation. Billionaires have everything except the one thing money can't buy: not dying. $1 billion and a body that rots at the same rate as everyone else's. On Wishawocracy, we find this the most fascinating thing about your wealthy. They accumulate resources for decades, building empires, optimizing returns, diversifying portfolios, and then their cells malfunction and they die like everyone else. It's as if a dragon spent its whole life hoarding gold and then choked on a coin. The irony would be poetic if it weren't so common. The package. Victory incentive alignment bonds, funded by treaty revenue, beating traditional portfolio yields, returns, the Gates Cancer Center, and a Nobel Peace Prize, and history books reading, funded the cure for death, legacy. And the part they won't say out loud but think every time their knee hurts: they're getting old, their genetics aren't special, and every disease cured is their lifespan extended. Survival. Your species' billionaires have been funding vanity projects for decades. Space tourism, underwater hotels, islands. None of these extend their lifespan. This does. It's the first vanity project where the vanity is rational. The domino effect. Insurance companies move first because pure financial logic is their entire personality, and curing disease reduces their costs. Their lobbying convinces politicians because money talks and insurance money talks loudly. Politicians create treaty momentum because votes follow money, follows lobbying, follows insurance, follows actuarial tables, which is the most boring causal chain in history, but also the most reliable. Defense contractors hedge because they can't risk being left out of a profitable shift. Pharma pivots because adapt or die, which is ironic advice to give an industry that's supposed to prevent dying. Billionaires pile in last because FOMO is powerful in humans generally and devastating in billionaires specifically, who have built their identities around being first and cannot tolerate being last. Why this can work? The coordination problem has a price tag. Public choice theory predicts that concentrated interests beat diffuse interests. Always. 10 lobbyists who each make $10 million from war will outfight 10 million patients who each lose $10 from disease. This is Olson's observation, and it's correct, and it's the reason your species builds weapons better than it cures cancer. The part Olson didn't account for: the people getting screwed have 90 times more money. Concentrated interests, defense, fossil fuels, have roughly $5 trillion in market cap and spend $100 million to $1 billion annually on political influence. Diffuse beneficiaries, everyone who'd benefit from cures, have $454 trillion in household wealth and spend approximately $0 on political influence because of coordination failure, which is the academic term for everyone wants it, but nobody does anything. Having more capital doesn't help if you can't deploy it. That's Olson's whole point, and he's right. A 90-to-1 capital advantage means nothing when each individual share is too small to motivate action. Coordination costs eat everything. This is why your species can't have nice things, stated in the language of economics so that economists will take it seriously. Incentive alignment bonds are a coordination mechanism disguised as a financial product. They turn political change into an investment. Investors don't need to care about curing disease. They need to care about returns. The returns happen to require curing disease. Whether this actually works at scale is an open question. Nobody's tried it. But the logic is, if you can make lobby for health pay better than lobby for war, lobbyists will lobby for health. This is not a controversial claim about human nature. It is, in fact, the only claim about human nature that has never been wrong. Why the cascade can happen, not must happen.
Once impact acceleration bonds, or IABs, concentrate financial benefits on the pro-health side, politicians face a new calculation where IAB benefits outweigh concentrated opposition costs. Each policy success increases IAB funding, which strengthens the coalition. Investors lobby for treaty expansion to increase their returns. The dynamic reverses. Supporting clinical trial funding becomes the concentrated benefit option. The diffuse interest becomes concentrated. The Olsonian problem dissolves. Not because humans got better, because the math changed. This isn't inevitable. It requires sufficient IAB funding to overcome opposition, and sufficient is a number nobody can calculate in advance. But the capital exists. It just needs a reason to move. On Washonia, we'd call this providing a reason. On Earth, you'd call it the most important financial product in history, or a pipe dream, depending on whether you've read the math. Why this scales? The ratchet effect. Each treaty expansion creates more political incentive funding to lobby for the next expansion. At 1%, political incentive funding is $2.72 billion per year. At 10%, that scales to 10 times. Politicians who supported the 1% treaty get rewarded. Those rewards grow if they push for 2%. It's a ratchet that only moves in one direction, the direction where people stop dying. You've built ratchets like this before. Social Security, Medicare. Once they exist, dismantling them is politically suicidal because too many people depend on them. The difference is you built those by accident, through crisis and desperation, and spent decades arguing about whether they were good ideas. This time, try doing it on purpose. On Washonia, we found that building things on purpose works better than building them by accident, though I realize this is a controversial position for a species that invented penicillin by leaving a sandwich out.